The following podcast is a presentation of Small Biz America.
Small Biz America.
The Brain.
Hi, I'm David Wolf. Our guest on this segment of the Small Biz Brain is professor at USC's Marshall School of Business. He's the former associate dean there and holds a PhD in organizational communication from USC. He's also the co-author of the book, Tribal Leadership, Leveraging Natural Groups to Build a Thriving Organization. This is a fascinating look into the nature of organizations, human behavior, and an invaluable guide to understanding how today's top companies perform, how to develop both personal and team excellence in your organization. Let's welcome co-author of Tribal Leadership, Dave Logan. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, David. Nice to be with you.
Great. Thanks for joining us on the Small Biz Brain. Now, I know this is a 10-year study of nearly 24,000 people in more than two dozen corporations. Many of these people we have heard of. What led to the 10-year study, and how did the project come about?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, just in a couple sentences, we were interested in why. We all know this phenomenon. You walk into one organization and you see leaders seemingly doing dumb things, but yet their leadership efforts work. And you go into other environments where leaders seem to do all the right stuff, and yet nothing works. And so we were puzzling ourselves about why that's the case, and then ultimately what can people do about it. So what we came to see is that culture is the dominant factor in determining whether organizations survive or not. And that's not a new conclusion. What our conclusion, or the conclusion that we came to that is new, is that leaders go through the systematic process of identifying what type of culture they have and then upgrading it one level at a time. And that's something that really nobody has written about until now.
So are tribal leaders necessary for the success of an organization in your view?
Oh, absolutely. We didn't find any examples of organizations that were successful that didn't have tribal leaders. And in many cases, the tribal leader is not the person who was in charge. It might have been someone who was had been with the organization for a while and just decided without any formal authority that they were going to do what it took to make that group succeed. They invested in the group, they built the tribe, and then in turn the tribe recognized that person as its leader.
What makes the leader the tribal leader? In other words, what distinguishes them? What are the qualities that distinguish them from the assigned leader, let's say, in that example?
Well, I mean, essentially what we found is that there really isn't a common personality or a common set of traits about leaders. It's more what they did. And so what we saw with leaders is that they figured out what type of a group they had, and then they began using what we call these stage-specific leverage points to move that to the next level. In many cases, the tribal leaders couldn't even name what they were doing. Many expressed a lot of frustration that they couldn't teach it to other people. But once they saw what the vocabulary was, they were able to label what they were doing and then start passing that information along. So the net effect of that is you then create entire companies of tribal leaders. And those are the organizations that are outperforming their industries and inventing best practices and doing the kind of stuff so that professors like me and my colleagues end up going and writing about what they do.
Sure, sure. So it sounds as though it's as much the group recognizing them as such and somewhat an intangible and slightly ethereal kind of quality that that shows up. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, there's a subtlety to it, but there's also sort of a power to it. I mean, the subtlety is what tribal leaders do that people don't often appreciate is they spend time building the tribe itself, building the culture, to a point where people identify with the group, identify that the group is doing something important, and then that group, as it starts to coalesce, looks back at the person that built it with this reciprocity, and gives them, you know, everything that most of us want in our career: loyalty, unprecedented levels of success and profitability and revenue and innovation and collaboration. But they don't do it because that person wanted to get those things. They almost do it as a kind of a the natural order of things. You know, you built the group, and you know, we appreciate what you've done, and we're really grateful for what you've done for us.
Now, I'm curious, in addition to the research you've done around all of this, these phenomenons in organizations, are you going into organizations and showing them how to do this or how to recognize and leverage these natural tendencies?
Yeah, well, you know, it's amazing when we do spend a lot of time in organizations, mostly just giving presentations about what we discovered and kind of what it means and what happens, almost without exception, is the groups self-identify where they are on this 1 to 5 scale of culture. Mm. You know, most are 2, 3, or 4 is kind of a bell curve around those middle ones, and people, you know, they always want to go to the top level, and the message is, no, you have to recognize where you are and then make plans to get to the next level. And once you solidify that, then you can move to the next level, all the way up to stage 5, which is as high as it gets. And you know, the whole idea is we don't want to create any dependencies on us or you know, even on the tribal leaders. We want the tribe itself to become self-directed, self-strategizing, forming things that they believe are an expression of their values, and then they go after those things just on a tear because no one told them to do it. They decided to do it themselves. And that's a real point of, you know, of just this kind of magic tipping point.
Yeah.
It's great to see.
Yeah. We're visiting with Dave Logan. He's the co-author of the book Tribal Leadership. Does the book, I guess the book in part walks through some of these steps. You mentioned a measuring scale of 5. Tell us a little bit about what's behind the cover of the book and what we would expect there.
Oh, well, sure. I mean, well, the cover itself contains stacks of paper clips, and they're so 5 different, you know, 5 different colored stacks, and what it hopefully brings up is this idea of these 5 types of culture. We'll start at the beginning. What we call stage 1 doesn't happen very often. It's less than 2% of the time in organizations, and that's where you see a lot of criminal behavior. That does explain Enron and WorldCom and, you know, these famous disasters. Stage 2 happens a quarter of the time, and there the theme of what people say is, my life stinks. You know, my life stinks because I work here. My life stinks because no one pays any attention to what I say. My life stinks because my words don't have any traction. That's the kind of culture that we like to make fun of in government service and organizations that are about to go out of business, big bureaucracies. Stage 3 happens almost half the time, 48% of the time, and there the theme is, I'm great, and you're not. So, David, if you and I were in that group, I would tell you why I'm great, and you would tell me why you're great, and it would all be done under this guise of civility.
Mm.
That's what you tend to see in healthcare with physicians, in law practices, in academia, where I spend a lot of time, among salespeople who are rewarded individually. So it's all about me outperforming you. So those are zones of personal competition. You get a lot done at 3, but very little collaboration, and that's a problem, especially for small businesses.
Okay.
Then at 4, that's where high performance starts to kick in. That's only about 22% of workplace tribes, and that's where people say, we're great, and they're not. So there's a group that they identify they're in competition with. And then at stage 5, which only happens about 2% of the time, the theme is, life is great, and it's all about doing what our values say we should do. There's no sense that we're trying to outperform another group, but in going after a pure expression of their values, they end up you know, creating things like the iPod or the graphic user interface, these technological marvels and best practices that we you know, have all become enamored with. Those tend to come out of those stage 5 cultures.
This is fascinating because you know, the idea that you're part, well, life is great, that proclamation right there says so much. I mean, it's something larger than you, the individual, or the product. It's this collective sense, and it sounds like it needs to be naturally cultivated and not taught.
Well, that's true. You know, the thing about tribes is they form naturally. No one tells us to do it. It's, you know, people debate the reason. I'm not a geneticist, and I'm not an anthropologist, so I'm not sure what the cause is. I just know it happens. You know, you see it in school. You see it from the time we're born until the time we die. So people go to work, and they naturally form these groups, and these groups naturally start to talk a certain way. Stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, stage 4, stage 5.
Yeah.
And managers come along never having been trained that these things even exist, much less what to do about them. And many managers just, you know, bash their head against the wall. What do I do about these groups and the grapevine, and how come I reorganize and it doesn't make any difference? Because the tribe is much more powerful than anything leaders do. So if leaders ride the horse in the direction it's headed instead of, you know, try to go against the grain here, you can make tribes work for you.
Absolutely.
When that happens, everybody
wins. Yeah, a form of leveraging what is naturally occurring rather than try to fight. I mean, I know in my own small business, there's a sense that this may be a different form of it, but everyone knows I'm the leader. And no matter who I decide to assign the task of being the manager to, there's always a sense, and this is a very micro example of what you're describing there, but I've experienced it. People will go around that assigned leader. They'll come to me because they have a sense, some kind of sense. In this case, they know I'm the owner of the business, that I'm the person that is leading, and it's not something I'm trying to do. In fact, I'm trying not to do it, quite honestly.
Right.
So it's fascinating.
Yeah, well, we see that a lot. And the one thing I would say that's, I think, of special interest to people in small businesses is the American myth about the entrepreneur is really incorrect, that someone has an idea and they form a business and they kind of pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and get it going.
Yeah.
If you talk to entrepreneurs, and I've worked with thousands at USC, we're pretty good at training entrepreneurs. In every case, a successful business is the result of a tribe. And that tribe involves family members, it might involve lawyers, it might involve CPAs and people who raise money, maybe angel investors. But there's this group that takes interest and ownership in that business doing well. And if that's a stage 4 group or stage 5 group, then when the business hits problems, and they invariably do, the tribe is smart enough to figure out what to do. When all of that rests on one individual, none of us is smart enough to figure out what's going on and how to react to things in real time, but tribes are.
They have a collective intelligence that transcends the single leader's ability to control.
Well, they do at the higher levels. At the lower levels, the tribe is actually dumber than individuals. And again, that's what you see at stage 2. That's why I get so frustrated when we have to go get our driver's license renewed.
That's one typical situation where you see that and you just roll your eyes at what's happening here.
Yeah.
Amazing. The book is Tribal Leadership, and you worked with some co-authors whom we should mention. Let's see.
I can jump in with it. One is John King. John and I have been business partners for going on 11 years now. John is an executive coach, has been in the field about 25 years, worked with something like 30,000 people. Every time we try to add up the number, we get shocked at how big it's become. And then Haley Fisher Wright, who's a physician and a very well-known physician leader. We do a lot of work in healthcare. And that's the little tribe that put together the book. But then we went out and interviewed some really remarkable people. We didn't want to write the book about these statistical tables and things we'd been finding. We wanted to write about real people. So we found a person that epitomized every one of our findings. So when we talked about stage 2, we interviewed the guy who draws Dilbert. That's Scott Adams, just as one example. Or the higher-performing cultures, we interviewed Brian France, the chairman of NASCAR. So it's really a story about tribal leaders and how people have done remarkable things, building great tribes and then getting the benefit of having built those.
I just love this. Is there a central website for the work you're doing?
Yeah, it's www.triballeadership, all one word, .net.
Okay, www.triballeadership.net. Dave Logan, thanks so much for lending your brain to the Small Biz Brain this morning. I'm sure we'll do it again, and continued success with the book and all the work you're doing.
Great. Well, thank you very much, David.
You got it.
Small Biz America.
The Brain.
This podcast is produced by Small Biz America. If you'd like to find out about hosting your own podcast, visit us at smallbizamerica.com.
Small Biz America.